This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 42 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I guess we didn't hear too many complaints about our episode done at 7 o'clock in the morning, huh?
Oh, the last episode. That's right. You and I were up at the crack of dawn in order to get the episode out. I think we did okay. It took a little bit of heavy editing, but in the end, I think it came out all right. Well, David, this episode, we have a little bit of news, but mostly we have a great guest for this episode.
We do. We figured we needed a break from just for our listeners listening, you and I. So we're welcoming back Bob Schmidt, the president of UA Propulsion Tech. I'm not sure what episode it was you were on last, Bob, but it was one of our earlier episodes. But thanks for coming back. We mustn't have been too bad.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me back. It's great. I think it was sometime early December, whatever number that would be.
We brought Bob on because Bob was lucky to be on the AUVSI Unmanned Systems 2014 conference, and we want to get some feedback on what that was like since Max and I weren't able to get to it. But that was Florida back on May 12th and 15th. And of course, we have a couple of news stories. A drone narrowly misses a commercial flight. This is becoming, over the last couple of weeks, common news. And DARPA has created hack-proof UAS software. And of course, we have our video of the week, but let's get started talking. So, Bob, you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right, our first item comes, actually it came in via Grant McCarron from the Plane Crazy Down Under podcast, and this is from the Crikey blog, Drone Just Missed Turboprop Over Perth Military Airspace. This was a de Havilland Dash 8 turboprop. It was on approach to Perth Airport, and they encountered something that they weren't expecting. They described it as a strobe light coming towards them. They took some evasive action, but even doing that, they say this object, whatever it was, passed them about 20 meters horizontally and about 100 feet away from them vertically. And this was at 3,800 feet. Now, most of the articles on this topic, not all of them, describe this as some kind of a UAV, but we don't really know what this was, do we?
No, the crew described the object as gray in color and shaped like a cylinder. Now, if we were back 10 years ago or even less, 5 years ago, a flashing strobe on a gray-colored object that was shaped like a cylinder would not be considered a UAV, but a UFO. So it's one of those things where all of a sudden, well, it can't be a UFO. It's got to be a UAV. So I think we're going to have a lot more of these stories. But one of the follow-ons that I saw on Twitter was someone made the comment that two near misses with a UAV and an aircraft over the last couple of weeks makes all sorts of news and everyone suddenly becomes terrified. But Discovery.com put airplane misses. How often do they happen? And this was a very interesting report, huh, Max?
Yeah, it sounds like near misses actually happen a lot. Now, the FAA has some statistics that they reported, so I assume this is not worldwide, just in the U.S., but still, in the year ending September 1st, 2011, the FAA reports that there were 1,895 near misses. The following year, the year ending September 1st, 2012, boy, the number really climbed. It more than doubled to 4,394 near misses. So it does happen a lot. Whether or not it happened this time with a drone or something else, I guess remains to be seen. The Australian authorities still don't really have an understanding of what this thing was.
Yeah, it is. Go ahead, Bob.
I was going to say, I've flown into this airport several times because Orbital's based there. And they said it was 23 kilometers northeast, and there really isn't much out there. There's a Swan winery area and some state land. So, you know, and at 3,800 feet altitude, you know, it's not an RC with a camera typically.
No.
And especially a cylindrical aircraft, you know. So my guess is it's probably a UAV, probably government, even though the government is denying it.
Yeah, I think that's the most likely explanation. Maybe we'll never know. The UFO people are all over this, and we see that actually in Australia there have been a number of UFO reports in the recent past. So this kind of adds to that.
Yeah, I guess the fact that I had a bright strobe, you know, it was early in the morning, like 9:13, I think they said in the morning, so it would have been light out. It is kind of the rainy season, so it could have been cloudy. But yeah, it's kind of strange, especially at that altitude. You know, it's not like it's right. a quadcopter or something at that altitude.
All right, our next item this comes from Fox News. This is concerning DARPA. The article is DARPA unveils hack-proof drone. David, this is something that this is a vulnerability that we've talked about in the past.
Yeah, it constantly comes up, and you know, it's even been a scenario on Fox's 24, where some terrorist hijacks a UAV, and the Iranians said they did this with the RQ-170 Wraith and crashed it. There's a lot of vulnerabilities. Everybody says, well, it's computers, so every computer's hackable if you got enough time, and we don't want a UAV to get suddenly pirated by some person and flown into a building or a crowd or anything like that. So DARPA seems to be taking on that challenge, huh?
Yeah, they have a project. It's called the High Assurance Cyber Military Systems Project, HACMS. And they're looking at, I think, not just with the UAS vulnerabilities, but others as well. But in the area of UAS, they have run a test of the prototype quadcopter that runs software that's supposedly more secure than the basically completely unsecure software that most everything is running. And they asked some cyber experts to come in and try to hack into this quadcopter, and they were unable to do that. So they're making progress. The first thing I wondered, guys, when I was looking into this was, you know, what are they going to do with this software? What are they going to do with this secure system once it's developed? And I was really happy to hear that they are intending to make this stuff publicly available, which is, I think that's great.
Bob, in your comings and goings, have you run across the issue of hacking and what's the tone of the industry out there?
Yeah, I haven't heard of it. I mean, other than the episode you mentioned with Iran and the RQ-170 Sentinel. I guess when I saw this article, I was, you know, surprised DARPA was funding, you know, hack-proof software for UAVs. I guess it kind of leads you to believe that maybe there is some vulnerability there. You know, I know a lot of the UAVs, it's proprietary what, you know, they're using for control systems and things to fly these. So I don't know what kind of proliferation there is between the big defense contractors. I'm sure it's not like Microsoft or Apple software where everybody's using the same thing. But I guess maybe if they can identify, you know, the weak areas and what you need to do to firewall it, I think that's good stuff. And if it's going to, you know, keep our UAVs out of the enemy's hands, I think that's great.
And it is kind of funny because you say, we talked about this, or maybe I just read about it. DARPA is also working on a universal kind of code that all of the military UAVs could operate from, some sort of standardization between all of the UAV programs. So maybe this will fold into that universal programming that, you know, we'll make it all hack proof, but we'll sort of keep a universal code. It's definitely going to be something we're going to need to follow, huh, Max?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really do think this is critical. I mean, the only other analogy I can think of quickly is email. email that you send is sent over the internet, obviously, and unless you encrypt it, it's in the clear, and anyone along the chain could pick up, intercept it, and read your email with very little difficulty. Well, communications with drones is sort of similar in most cases. Now, I don't know if what DARPA's doing is looking at encrypting the communications, or if it's looking at doing something with the actual control software that's running on the UAS, or both. But whatever it is, I think it's important work, and it's great that they're going to, or they intend to make this available for both commercial and defense software industries. So that's good.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I mean, that's the software is not my space, so I'm not an expert in that. But from what I do know, a lot of the UAVs don't store any onboard data in case for some reason it goes down. So it's continuously streaming data. So you want to make sure that that data stream is secure. So, yeah, this is all good stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess we should get Bob involved in even some more. And so tell us about AUVSI and give us some, for us novices who haven't had a chance to go, what's it like?
Yeah, I guess I've been going probably the last 10 years. This one was in Orlando, of course. Typically, the UAV conferences, it's mainly attended by UAV producers, people that supply systems and payloads for these systems. Of course, UAV customers, press, and the military. And in the past, the show has mainly been defense-focused. But this year, I saw a lot more commercial discussions. They had, I didn't attend them, but they had some FAA discussions as far as opening up airspace, especially for, you know, agriculture and commercial purposes for, you know, inspection of, you know, oil and you know, right now there are only a handful of UAVs that are FAA certified. And even those, I think they still have to get permission to fly in certain areas. So, but yeah, it was a very good show. It was very busy for me. I had, I'm just in Tampa, so had visitors from the companies I represent for probably a week and a half. We had the guys from Vols Servos out of Germany in before the conference. They had an exhibit there. Then the Germans of Hirth Motors, those guys came in on Sunday. They also had an exhibit showing their two-stroke aircraft engines. And also, the parachute company, Sky Graphics, they had a couple representatives that were in country to attend the meeting. And also, the CEO from Orbital was in. We had some various meetings with customers during the week. So, very busy week. Saw a lot of things. Not much. Didn't really see a lot of new things, although, like I said, there is more on the you know, the commercial element. You saw more multicopters this year. The company Parrot, which does the AR drone, and they also own SenseFly, which, you know, they're selling that mainly in the ag business, I think. They had a large booth and did like drone performances every half an hour or so. So they had this caged area where they had choreographed drones with music. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, I guess the other thing that was kind of new or relatively new this year is these vertical takeoff and landing systems for fixed wings. I don't know if you guys saw the Arcturus Jump.
Yes, we've
VTOL. Yeah. It's got the a system they can attach to their T-20 and T-16 fixed wings. So it has booms on the wings, providing like a quadcopter vertical takeoff and landing. And then they can switch the motors off and go to wing flight.
Sort of gives the best of both worlds, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. There was another company there, Drone Tech. They're a U.S. company, and they also have a variant doing the same thing, the AV2 Pelican. They also have a larger UAV, 110 kilogram, that actually has twin engines, a tractor and a pusher, and they use both engines to get it in the air off a runway, and then they switch one off for flight. So, but yeah, it was a very good show. I think The challenge in Orlando, I mean, the Orlando is a great place for conventions, but for military conventions, it's a little bit of a challenge because typically AUVSI is in D.C. and you get a lot more servicemen. So I don't think I saw as many servicemen there, but there were quite a few attendees, and we had a lot of good contacts during the show. So I think it was a very productive show, at least for me, hopefully for the other people that attended. But so you guys have not been to one yet?
Not yet, but we hope to correct that in the near future, or then for next year anyway.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very good show. I mean, the following week they had the SOFIC conference in Tampa, which is the Special Operation Forces industry conference. And that one, you know, covers a lot of different things, but they also have a few UAV companies there that supply into SOCOM. Another good conference that has several UAVs is the big Army conference, the AUSA, their annual meeting conference that's in D.C. in the October timeframe. That's pretty much anybody that sells anything into the Army. So it's a great conference to attend. Lots of UAVs and, you know, weapons and missiles and vehicles and everything. So it's very interesting.
Bob, did you get a sense from the conference attendees as to what the mood is regarding the FAA and their progress in developing regulations?
It's a tough one. Most of my experience is more in the defense side of things, not as much yet on the commercial. I know there's a lot of frustration in trying to get some rules established, and it seems like those rules are now shifting, and people are pushing the rules. And unfortunately, anybody with a DJI Phantom, they think is a drone, and there's a lot of bad press out there because these guys are flying them in areas that they shouldn't and at altitudes they shouldn't. So I think that's probably not helping the situation. Maybe they'll have some pressure because it looks like the Australians and the UK have put some things in place. Maybe the U.S. can piggyback on some of that stuff. I think the operator training stuff is a good idea. But, yeah, I guess on the defense side, of course, with the troops coming out of Afghanistan and the Pentagon cuts, everybody is hungry for new business. And I think, like I said last time, I think the UAV business is going to be one of those industries that there's a lot of people that are trying to get into business, and the good guys are going to get gobbled up by the large defense contractors, and the ones that don't have contracts or can make it work, you know, there's going to be, you know, it's probably going to be one of those things where there's a dozen key UAV manufacturers. I think on the FAA side, I think they could easily open up the agriculture stuff quicker than some of the other things. And I think that's a great idea. My brother in Michigan is actually, you know, he's a Pioneer seed dealer and he does soil sampling, and he's trying to get involved in the UAV and the things too, because there's a lot of benefits to the farmer for, you know, what these things can do to help them. So,
yeah, for sure. Agriculture is a big, big growth area for this industry.
Yep. And there's a lot of, systems out there. I'm by no means an expert, but just looking at some of these smaller, they're typically electric fixed wings, like your Senseflies. And, I think there's another one out of the UK. There's a lot of, companies, even Ag Eagle here in the U.S., that are supplying these small little fixed wings with electric motors that go for probably 20 minutes, but they can do both optical and infrared, and I think they even have some other advanced sensors for specifically for the farming industry.
All right, where is the 2015 event scheduled for? Do you know?
Yeah, that one's in Atlanta, and it's going to be in early May again. They typically have this conference in August, and this year they moved it up to May to try to get more Europeans, because August is kind of a European holiday. I think France and Italy are shut down, plus, you know, a lot of people don't travel. I wouldn't say that attendance was any higher than the show in August, but you never know if that's location dependent. Like I said, didn't see as many servicemen, so maybe that was a factor. I don't know. So it's Atlanta next year, and I think the following year it's in New Orleans, and then it probably goes back to D.C., although I'm not sure.
All right, yeah, Atlanta in August would be kind of brutal, I think, so.
Yeah, even...
May sounds good.
Atlanta in May is not... Well, this year it was kind of bizarre, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's probably closer to you guys now. You guys should try to make it there, and it's definitely a good show to attend. There's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of people that are selling systems, and anybody that sells anything into a UAV. You know, of course, I'm on the propulsion, servo, and parachute side, but you know, there's electrical connectors and flight control systems and payloads and cameras and you know, anything that can go inside a UAV or carbon fiber manufacturers that support that, they do support that event.
All right, David, we have a couple of videos of the week. We each came up with a video this time, didn't we?
Yeah, you had posted one and I found one that I decided that we could do. Since it's such a popular segment, there's no reason why we can't each do one a week.
For sure. Well, who wants to go first?
Oh, I'll go first, I guess.
Okay.
Mine's the artsy fartsy, what can you do with a drone? But I like the subject matter, which are super yachts. Actually, it's a Vimeo high def video of a super yacht's mast being pulled by a crane from the ship, from the hull of the ship. And filmed very spectacularly in a harbor in Florida with lots of those dream ships that you see floating around the Mediterranean, and really well done video. I don't think I remember seeing what they used to photograph it, but it's one of those 5 minutes you go, ooh, ah, and you look at all the pretty ships, and one of those videos kind of like that we like, unlike yours, which is very... Mr. Retired and should be learning to fly. What's yours about?
This was pretty interesting. This is a tutorial that is, I think, in 9 parts. So there's actually 9 videos, and it was produced by Hoverfly, and it's called Basic Quadcopter Tutorial. Well, Chapter 1 is in the event. And what these do is they take you through in detail the steps to construct a quadcopter from individual components. And so it starts with, like, you know, here's the frame and here's some rectangular aluminum tubing that, you know, the guy found, and it takes it through the motors, the controllers, the software, the whole thing, all the way through testing it and first flight. So, I mean, if you're interested in building your own, this will give you a good idea of just exactly what it takes to do that. If you're not really interested in that, but just interested in sort of the more details about how does a pretty sophisticated quadcopter work, what are the components and how do they interact, it's a good way to learn that. So that's the video of the week from me. So we'll put links to both of these, of course, in the show notes, and invite you to take a look at those. Also, to submit your own. We do get a lot of listeners sending in suggested videos, and we encourage people to do that. Just send them to us at feedback@theuavdigest.com.
Well, and I just want to dovetail off of your subject matter. I got my favorite magazine in the mail this week, which is Air and Space Smithsonian, and they actually have a how you build your own quadcopter section in this month, in the May or June. I don't remember which it was, but it's the most recent episode. So definitely pick that one up. And that brings us to 2 weeks from now, Max. We can't let Airplane Geeks hog the whole day, but if you're in the DC area, I suggest on the 14th of June, stopping by the Udvar-Hazy Center for Be a Pilot Day at the Smithsonian, where they bring in, this year they're bringing in a 777, a bunch of other airplanes, and see what it's like, and then stop by and see Max and I broadcasting live for Airplane Geeks, and maybe we'll even do a segment about UAVs for our show, little show here. So definitely I want to give a shout out to the Smithsonian team, and we want you to come. And Saturday night at 7:30 or 8 o'clock, we'll be at the Red Robin, which is in Chantilly, which is just south of the museum. So we'll be having a social or a meetup, and stop by and have a beer or say hi to Max and I, because we would like to, we're very familiar with our Airplane Geeks listeners, but we really would like to get to know our UAV listeners also.
Yep, very good. We look forward to that event each year. It's really exciting. It's a great family event too. So if you're anywhere near the Northern Virginia area around Father's Day weekend, come with your family and everyone will have a great time.
Well, feedback. You want to take the first one?
Yeah, we heard from Bill English. Bill's with the NTSB, and he sent us a link. This is from the department's, this is from an appropriations bill, the Departments of Transportation and Housing and Urban Development and related agencies, the appropriations bill for 2015. And there is an item in there concerning UAS under the Unmanned Aircraft Systems section, which is kind of interesting. It reads this. It says, the FAA Modernization and Reform Act of 2012 directed the FAA to integrate UAS into the national airspace system by 2015. Of course, we've talked about that many, many times. It says, however, and this is where it gets interesting, it is uncertain when the FAA can integrate UAS into the nation's airspace and what will be required to achieve the goal. The lack of an overall framework for the new systems may be inhibiting progress on UAS integration. The committee is concerned that the FAA may not be well positioned to manage effectively the introduction of UAS in the United States, particularly in light of a recent ruling by the NTSB administrative judge regarding the use of small UAS for commercial purposes. That's the Trappi case. Now, given these challenges, the committee has provided an additional $3 million in the aviation safety activity to expedite the integration of UAS into commercial airspace. So what this appropriations bill does is kind of throws $3 bucks at the FAA at the problem. Now, whether or not money is what's needed to move things along more quickly remains to be seen. But here's our government in action.
What do you think, Bob? Do you think it'll help?
It's hard to say. Money doesn't always help.
That's right.
Especially when the government's involved.
All right. We also heard from Kevin. You want to take that one, David?
Sure. Kevin starts off with, love the show. Not sure if you've seen this yet, where have you heard that one before? But on CNN, I ran across a story that showcased a compilation of videos all shot from UAVs. How to shoot amazing video from drones. And they do kind of delve into the subject at a level I would describe as just scratching the surface, but it's pretty cool stuff. So, and he put a link to the article. And thanks, Kevin. So we've got more videos for you to look at, since it seems to be the theme for UAVs is UAVs shoot video and videos make us happy. And the next one is from another Plane Crazy Down Under correspondent, Ben Ippolito.
He sent us a link to an article in Australian Aviation, which is Northrop Grumman to collaborate with RMIT University on UAS. So RMIT, that's the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology, and they and Northrop Grumman plan to study airworthiness operating requirements for UAS in Australia. Now, they're going to focus mostly on larger aircraft, and I found myself wondering what Northrop Grumman's strategy is for this kind of study. I don't know if they are really looking at a, you know, point solution that's specific to Australia, or if they're looking to develop some worldwide concepts that they can develop in Australia but apply throughout the world. So that'll be interesting to follow. Ben, we'll count on you to keep an eye on this story as it develops.
Yeah, which just goes to prove that Australia is definitely trying to move forward with the process, and so is the UK. As we limp along, but we would like to thank our contributors for providing more ounces of alcohol with the FAA drinking game.
Yes. All right. Well, you've been listening to episode 42 of the UAV Digest. Find us at theuavdigest.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter. Yes, you can sign up for our newsletter. Now, the interesting thing is that we don't have a newsletter, but someday we probably might. And so on the website, you can submit your email address to get on the list. Also, you can find show notes for this episode at theuavdigest.com/42 for episode 42. We'd really like to thank our guest, Bob Schmidt, president of UAV Propulsion Tech. Bob, tell our listeners where they can find you online.
Please go to uavpropulsiontech.com, also on Twitter at Schmidt Products. So yeah, reach out. If you have any questions, please contact me through those places. And thanks again, Max and David, for having me on. Very interesting discussions. And hopefully I can provide some more insight in the future.
Great. Thanks, Bob.
Don't forget, you can send us feedback at feedback@theuavdigest.com. We're up to 16 reviews on iTunes and 5 up to on Stitcher. So we appreciate that you guys doing that. The more 5 stars we get, the more people will find us and we can grow our community. And last but not least, you could always advertise us the old-fashioned way, like I spent last week on vacation carrying my messenger bag emblazoned with the UAV Digest logo that I got from our Cafe Press UAV Digest site. So I guess that about wraps it up for this week, Max. So this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.